All right, guys, so this week we wanted to do something a little bit different. You know, rather than having a guest on the show and doing more of an interview style, we decided to change it up and do a big Q&A. So I have about 20 to 25 questions written down that we have saved up from our social media channels. You know, we posted up a story and had people send in questions, and the ones that were the most common or the ones that I feel the most players benefit from, I kind of wrote them down. Most of them are obviously technical and golf swing based. There's a few of them that aren't. And it's going to be about, you know, trying to get better. So we're going to hop right in. The first question I received, which I got numerous times, is what is the quickest way to avoid being laid off at the top of the backswing? And I'm going to do my best to give very detailed descriptions on these because, unfortunately, none of them are very short answers. The reality is the golf swing is very subjective, so it's going to require kind of a comprehensive look into every question. But what is the quickest way to avoid being laid off? So let's understand what laid off is. Laid off essentially means for the right-handed player at the top of the backswing, the shaft is pointing to the left, or in a simplistic way, the shaft is pointing behind the player's back at the top of the backswing, no matter their dexterity. So is this a problem for starters? Well, it really depends on the length of swing. You know, when a swing is very short, we need to keep in mind that that also means there is less time in the downswing to make adjustments to your variables if you want to hit the ball well. So if you have a really, really short swing, that doesn't just mean your backswing is short, it also means your downswing happens in the blink of an eye. Meaning if you have certain variables that are out of position that need to be put back into position, well, you have a lot less time to do so when your swing is very short. So as a result of that, I actually prefer very laid off backswings. And obviously the severity of how laid off it needs to be will depend on numerous factors. And to some degree, again, it revolves around the actual length of swing itself. But if you look at a guy like John Rahm, who's very short, his shaft alignment needs to be there because if his shaft was more vertical or across the line for how short his backswing was, he would have to do way too much work to the shaft in order to reroute it into a shallow position coming down so that he doesn't get so steep on it and hack at the ball. And so for a player of his swing length, being laid off is phenomenal. Now, obviously, as players get longer with their backswings, then it becomes more of an issue if you're too laid off. I see golfers get so laid off with a long backswing that as soon as the hands start to drop, the shaft starts to steepen. So it gets more upright or more vertical coming down, and that creates all sorts of compensations from the body in terms of how it's moving and how it's tilting, and you know that's what leads to flippiness and timing and all sorts of problems. So as swings get longer, you know, if the swing is like at parallel or even longer than that, being laid off, in my opinion, is almost always problematic. So in that scenario, yes, you want to be less laid off. So that would be just a look into what laid off is and when it's actually penalizing to begin with. And so what's the quickest way to avoid being laid off? Well, really, the truth is it depends on what is creating the laid off position from one golfer to the next. The truth is not everybody creates the same patterns at the top of the backswing. So, you know, one golfer might be laid off because they have a ton of forearm roll at some point in the backswing. So for a right-handed player, if their forearms are rotating to the right too much, so they call that pronation of the lead forearm, you know, that would cause the shaft to get very laid off. And if they don't somehow manipulate the shaft differently after doing that, the shaft is going to stay in a very laid off position. So in that scenario there, you would have to get rid of the forearm roll. And you can do that in a wide variety of ways. Another reason why a golfer might get laid off at the top of the backswing could be because of how their elbow joints are moving, how the shoulder rotation is positioned. So I talk about this on my social media all the time, you know, the idea between external and internal shoulder rotation. And that's actually one of the questions that I'm going to get later on as well, which is, you know, if you have too much external rotation, meaning your trail elbow joint is too much in front of your body in the backswing, right, where the forearm of that trail arm is like folding backwards behind you, well, that would cause a shaft, in theory, to get more laid off. That could be a reason why. And so really, the answer to this question would be the best way to avoid being laid off at the top of the backswing. First of all, understand if it's actually a penalty for you to be laid off. And if it is, then try to figure out why you're getting there. It could be because of the shoulder rotation. It could be because of the forearms. It could be because of the way in which the wrists are hinging. You know, if you have an exaggerated amount of flexion to the lead wrist that tends to get the shaft in a more laid off position. There's so many ways in which a player might get there. So, you know, it would be subjective from player to player. You can theoretically just keep it simple and say, hey, the shaft is laid off. Let me just try to feel more across the line. In theory, if you try to feel more across the line, you'll offset the laid off tendencies and you'll probably get it somewhere in line with the target, depending on how well you exaggerate and whatever. So, you know, there's no real quick answer to it. Unfortunately, that would be the case for a lot of things, but you know, that would be the best way to kind of go about looking into it. So the second question is, you know, how do you get players to release the club? And this is a fun one because there are some golfers who don't release the club enough, right? So you have a golfer who has too much shaft lean, they pull on the handle too much. And, you know, if you have a golfer who, you know, has too much shaft lean and doesn't release the club nearly enough, you'll either see one of two things. You'll see, you know, they deliver too much ball speed, meaning their smash factor numbers get too high on a launch monitor. For all of you golf geeks out there, essentially when you have too much shaft lean, you compress the ball too much. Oftentimes the ball can come out too low with very little spin, and it's hard to stop it on the greens. The ball comes out very low, and the smash factor gets too high. So relative to the amount of club head speed you're generating, the ball takes off too hot. So that would be, you know, an issue, certainly. Or what ends up happening from that is the golfer delivers so much shaft lean that the face angle can't square up. You know, keep in mind, the more you lean the shaft forward, the more you're actually opening the club face, believe it or not. And so when you do too much of that and you never release the club, you can just keep the face angle open oftentimes, unless the face is super shut coming into the ball, obviously. And that can cause you to hit a lot of kind of blocks. So how do I get a player to release the club? One of two ways, really. And these are like two different ways you can look at it. Number one, you can actually get the face angle of the golfer more open throughout the golf swing. You know, if I get the face angle of the golfer more open, well, guess what? In order for them to hit the ball towards their target, they need to now release the hands in order to square the face up. And this is kind of a messed up way of thinking about it, but it's a really efficient method. You know, you can put an alignment stick on the floor as like a visual reference for your target line, and you can get a player to get the face angle more open and tell them, hey, I want you to have the face angle more open. And the way in which you would do that completely varies from player to player. It might be just a weaker grip. It might be a difference in wrist angles or whatever. And you can tell them, look, your face angle is going to be more open coming down. It's going to be less shut. If your face angle is more open coming down and you don't release the club, you have too much shaft lean or whatever, you're just going to hit the ball a mile off target, offline. So what you want them to do is you would create an objective of saying, look, let's create this new environment where the face is not as closed, but I still want you to get the ball to start down this alignment stick that the golfer is going to see visually in front of them. Well, guess what? In order for them to do that, if the face angle is more open, their only option really at that point is to release the hands, right? And I would teach them how to get the lead wrist to travel from flexion to extension to release. So you don't want them doing it by cheating the drill by rolling the forearms. You want them to do it through a releasing of the wrist. So you would get them to feel that, to square the face up. That would be one method. The second method revolves around the pivot. You can get a player to extend their spine at the appropriate time. If you can get a golfer to extend up enough, you can get them to get further away from the ball when you're doing that. They're pushing off the ground more and all that. Well, guess what? In order for them to make contact with the ball and square everything up, they're going to have to release their wrists and their hands at some point, right? So that would be another way of going about it. Golfers who retain posture for too long and stay in forward bend forever, oftentimes you tend to see an exaggerated amount of shaft lean. At a certain point, your spine needs extension. You want to be able to hit the ball up in the air. You need spin, right? People see like spinning the ball too much as a bad thing, and certainly if it's exaggerated, it is. But sometimes having a little more spin, hitting the ball a little higher, is necessary, especially if you're somebody who delivers too little of it and you hit it too low. So going about it through the pivot, going about it through the club face, there's a couple of different ways you can work on that, but you know, you can be very effective if you go about it the right way. So the next question is, best drills to eliminate a slice. Well, here's the truth about slicing. Everybody automatically, or at least the recreational golfer, typically will immediately look at slicing and say, hey, this golfer is probably over the top of it. They're steep with the shaft. They're cutting across the ball. Sure, to some degree, that is not incorrect, right? There are a lot of golfers out there who slice who are like way over the top, as the modern day golfers call it, very steep with the shaft. They're very out to in with their club path. And obviously that creates an excessive amount of curvature away from the target, in most cases a slice, so for the right-handed player, curving right. Well, the truth is, yes, the path is certainly creating more of that slice pattern. But the reality is the slice is being created because the club face is too open relative to the direction that the path is traveling upon. So the slice is, in every case, more of the fact that the club face is too open versus the fact that the path is too out to in. So if you want to eliminate a slice, okay, you need to make sure the club face is less open in your golf swing. In theory, you can be steep with the shaft and cut across the ball, but if your club face is very closed, you will hit pulls. So as a right-handed player, if you're swinging, you know, 8 degrees out to in on the ball, right, in theory, that might create a slice. But if you start to shut the face down and get the club face less open, you're just going to start pulling it left. Now, you might not be hitting your target, but the ball is going to have to travel left at some point to avoid slicing, right? So the first step to getting rid of a slice is to square the club face up more, get it less open. From there, then once the club face is in a better, more functional position for you, then you can learn to manipulate the shaft differently to square the path up and get the path less out to in. And you can remove the over-the-top look. But before even considering trying to change the shaft movement, if you're somebody who slices the ball, you need to get the club face in a stronger position, whether through a stronger grip, you know, more left wrist flexion for the right-handed golfer, so lead wrist being more bowed. You know, make sure the forearms are not creating a problem. I mean, there's so many reasons why a golfer might have the face angle open, but really, club face is king. Make sure the club face is less open, you'll stop slicing the ball. So what are the best ways to get the shaft steeper on the backswing? Okay, so two main ways you can go about it. And this relates kind of to some degree to the laid off shaft question. You know, you can work on it through the forearms. If you can keep the forearms more closed in the backswing, you will get the shaft more vertical going back. So what do I mean by more closed? As a right-handed golfer, rolling my forearms open in the takeaway would be rolling them to the right. Well, if I start to teach myself to rotate the forearms the opposing direction, more to my left, well, guess what? I'm going to start to make sure the club face is the shaft is more upright, less shallow, going back, less laid off. So if you can train your forearms to now counter roll the forearms the opposing direction, so as a right-hander to my left, I will get the shaft more vertical in the backswing. And it's not just in the takeaway, I'm talking about retaining that feel throughout the backswing. Or what you can do is straight up just teach yourself how to create what we call as radial deviation, meaning upward hinging of the wrists. Some people call it like cocking the wrists. Some people call it creating wrist hinge, wrist set. Well, if you can create an upward hinging of the wrist, right, almost like you're trying to reel in a fish that you just caught, right? If you are creating that upward hinging, you are going to stand the shaft up. So think about like the handle of the club pointing to the ground really early, really, really vertical, straight down to the ground. So best way to get the shaft steeper would be either through the actual setting of the wrists to get the club more vertical, or through the forearm rotation is another very effective method you can do. So what are the common issues with having too much lead arm depth at the top of the backswing? I mean, wow, there's a ton, really. You know, having too much depth to the lead arm, you will see one of two tendencies. One is far more common, which is where you might just get the arm so flat and so deep and behind you, it gets really hard to avoid swinging too far from the inside. Meaning the deeper your hands get, the more inside out in theory you'll want to swing on it. If your arm structure gets too flat and too deep and your hands are like really, really far behind you, it just gets too hard to avoid hitting hooks and blocks. Your path gets too strong from inside out. It's hard to square things up. And then it's going to require a lot of manipulations of the hands at the bottom to avoid hitting a snap hook. And even then, you might still end up doing it. So most common issue, I would say, is just swinging too far from the inside. You know, if you remove some depth to the hands, meaning you get the hands taller and less behind you at the top of the backswing, you would swing less from inside out, and that would be an easy way to neutralize your path issue. So that would be the number one reason. Number two is very, very specific and very uncommon. This would be kind of an outlier issue I come across, and I only really see this with tour players, which is where sometimes they get the hands so deep in the backswing, they feel stuck, they feel like they're trapped. And what ends up happening is because they have so much spatial awareness, they're such good players and they're such talented athletes, they will actually manufacture and manipulate the hands more out in front of them coming down. So they end up having a bad sequence where their hand path moves way too aggressively outward in transition. And they're doing that in reaction to the fact that they're too deep on the way back and they feel stuck and there's nowhere to go. So they have to create space. And that doesn't happen very often, but, you know, I have dealt with that with some tour players before. And we've actually gotten them to feel like they're actually less deep in the backswing, to feel like they can actually retain that coming down. It's weird, and it's kind of goes against what we'll see with a lot of players, but it does happen. So that would be kind of my number one answer would be just you're hitting a lot of blocks and hooks. You're swinging too far from the inside. So next one would be best drills to avoid hip sway in the backswing. So hip sway, basically what they're meaning is their pelvis is moving laterally away from the target too much on the backswing. So as a right-handed player like myself, that would mean my entire lower body structure is like bumping to the right too much. Really simple. You can just put a chair down, attach your trail hip to the chair. So as a right-hander like me, attach your right hip to the chair, and then in your backswing, teach yourself to create space, meaning you're actually going to feel like the right side of your pelvis, your right hip is actually moving behind you, right? And you're creating space between your right hip and the chair, as opposed to sliding the chair away from the target, right? You actually want to start with your right hip on the chair if you're a right-handed player, the trail hip, okay? You want to start it on the chair, and you don't want to just keep it on the chair and not move the chair. You actually want to create space, meaning you're actually going to feel like your pelvis is actually staying towards the target almost, and the trail hip is getting behind you. That way, you are teaching yourself how to avoid hip sway. So that would be a really simple way of going about it. So the next question is completely unrelated to the golf swing. Somebody just asked me, actually three people asked me, what is your handicap? So when I was playing in my playing days when I was younger, before I kind of took a career in coaching, at my best, my handicap, I think registered in Golf Canada, was a plus 1.8. I would say that right now I'm probably closer to a scratch. On a really good day, I can shoot under par, assuming things are working really well. And on a bad day, I can shoot mid to high 70s, like a lot of golfers. So I would say my handicap is close to a scratch now. I mean, I have around this year of 68. I also have around this year of 76. So just to kind of give you the idea, the range is no different for a good player than a bad one. 10 shots, good or give or take in either direction, is certainly a possibility for a lot of golfers. So, or 5 shots in either direction, 10 shots total. So that is my handicap right now. I do not actually keep a formal handicap at this present moment. I certainly don't play nearly enough. Between the amount of work we have with all our tour players and the people who come see me for lessons, I probably play 4 to 5 rounds a year, so it's not really necessary for me, but I can still play some good golf, thankfully. And, at the end of the day, it's important to upkeep your game to a certain degree so that you can still actually showcase what you are trying to teach our players. At the end of the day, the theory behind the golf swing is fun, but if you can't practically show your student what you're trying to do differently, it can get difficult for them to understand sometimes. So I hope that makes sense. Differences between the irons and the driver. I got this question a ton. I think I got this question probably 10 times because, in all fairness, I don't even know if I have a video posted on my social media page of, the difference between an iron swing and a driver swing. So there are a couple of variations outside of the obvious being the ball position and the attack angle. Golfers are pretty well aware for the most part that you want to hit up on your driver. And with your irons, I wouldn't say it's a necessity to hit down on them, but most good players do hit down on them. That's why you'll see the divot happen after the golf ball with the irons, because the attack angle is down. So the low point happens after the ball, which is why the divot happens afterwards. With the driver, if you really want to maximize your distance, oftentimes that requires an upward attack angle, meaning you're hitting up on the ball. So your low point actually is going to happen before the ball, and then your club head is traveling in a upward direction up until the moment of the strike. So it's important to know how that affects everything else. I mean, when you hit more up on the ball, when the ball position is more forward, your club path also moves more outside in. Okay, so the more down you hit on the golf ball, like your irons, your club path is actually going to be more inside out. It won't guaranteed be inside out. It will simply be more inside out than with your driver, for example. So two golfers are hitting shots. If one guy has a club path of 3 degrees right with his mid irons, well, all else equal, his driver swing, if he's hitting more up on it, will probably be less than 3 degrees to the right. It'll be either 1 degree to the right or 0 or a little bit to the left even. That's why you see some really good players play draws with their irons and fades with their driver, is because the ball position and the attack angle changes actually shifts their club path as well. So they are more draw biased with the irons and less so with the driver. So I hope that makes sense. So obvious differences would be just the attack angle and the ball position and all that. And then it comes to, how do you actually manipulate that differently? Well, some golfers like to work on the tilting. So, you know, setting up a little more symmetrical with your iron swing, shoulders more level. With the driver, you have the trail shoulder dropping a little bit. Your pelvis could be bumped forward a little bit. There's a couple variations there. And pressure moves differently, but that's a whole nother ball game that is a little too complex for a podcast trying to explain it this way. So yeah, there are a couple of differences between irons and driver. There are some excellent iron players that I've seen who actually hit up on their irons. You know, I've seen a really, really good player in front of me who is like a plus four handicap hit one up on a seven iron and he stripes it. So the idea that you absolutely need to hit down on your irons is also false, because there are some really good players who do not do that. You know, I wouldn't say that that's a majority. I mean, certainly that's not the case, but there are some good players who are outliers that do that. So just keep that in mind. So the next question is thoughts on the 10-finger grip or interlock, or what is better? I personally don't have a preference. Certainly as players get better, I do not have a preference. I don't know if I've ever once changed a golfer who's a good player who's come to me between a 10-finger to an interlock or vice versa. If a player comes to me with a 10-finger grip, so be it. That's totally cool. If a player comes to me with an interlock grip, once again, so be it. What I will say is I have noticed, and this is just in my own experience, when it comes to females who have slow swing speeds or it comes to juniors, I have noticed more of a benefit in being a 10-finger or overlap grip, not so much interlock. And this is not necessarily to say that it's impossible, but I've noticed that the golfer finds it difficult for pain reasons on their wrists and their fingers, for speed reasons, where when they try to swing the club really fast, I notice either a lot of injuries in the fingers when they're interlocking it, or they just cannot swing as fast and as controlled because it feels very uncomfortable and painful. So in my experience, when it comes to those kind of players, I would like to see it more of a 10-finger, if overlap at best. When it comes to a good player coming to me, whatever the grip is, very rarely will I actually manipulate that differently, just in terms of the style, not so much the strength of it. I'm talking specifically the style of the grip. So what do you look for when you're working with a new student? I got this question a ton as well. People love the idea of kind of, I guess, looking into the insight of how I go about, you know, working with a new student. A couple of different things. You know, for starters, the number one thing I look at with a new student really is creating a balanced setup position, I think, is extremely important. If you set up really poorly into the golf ball, the odds are you're not going to allow yourself to create an efficient movement through the golf ball in either direction, backswing or downswing. And that can create a lot of problems. So if I had the choice, I would say the first thing I look at is just making sure the golfer is in a balanced position. From there, then what I'm doing is just focusing on, let's create some good tilts in the backswing with the body. So let's create some good shoulder playing. You know, what are the most common things? And we can discuss this with everybody. You know, what is the most common thing we'll see with beginners? We will see that they'll set up over the ball. They're very stiff in their movement. It's not very athletic. But you'll typically see a lot of elevation to the lead shoulder when they're trying to raise their arms in the backswing, right? So you'll see them come completely out of the shot, out of their posture on the backswing. So a lot of the work we do to give them a better chance of controlling their low point with a new student is not only on creating that balanced setup, that's the first priority, but then from there, once they have somewhat of a comfortable grip, whatever that may be, then it's going to be on, hey, let's create some good pivot stuff in the backswing. Let's just make sure your lead shoulder doesn't elevate so much. That way they stay in their shot a lot better and they have a better chance of making contact with the ball, because when they're creating that elevation, which is very common with beginners, you know, it requires a lot of then timing of how low they're going to get on the way down, and then they chunk it, blade it, top it, or they straight up whiff the ball a lot. Right, a lot of times what you'll see with beginners is they will create elevation in the backswing to their body and then they don't come down enough and they straight up just whiff the ball. So I would say priority number one would be just a nice balanced setup position that's athletic and gives them a chance to move properly and doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to be within a certain range of acceptability. And then number two would be let's, you know, create some good pivot tilting stuff in the backswing so that the golfer doesn't come up and out of the shot. So we are about 10 questions in, which is about halfway. I just wanted to take a little break here and catch a breather, and we're going to come back to this and we'll continue answering the questions. But I hope you guys are enjoying this. If ever anybody has any sort of questions regarding this, whether I'm talking too fast or I'm talking too scientifically, or maybe you would like me to explain one of these questions in greater detail, please send me a message and let us know. I would be happy to clarify that for you guys. But we do hope you enjoy, obviously, this and, you know, can learn and benefit from it, okay? All right, folks, so we are back with the next half of the questions here. Is over-rotation of the hips in the backswing an issue? How do you prevent it? I would say it certainly can be. You know, in my experience, most golfers are don't rotate the hips enough. So I would certainly like to see most golfers actually create more hip rotation as opposed to less. Restricting your hip turn is a nightmare scenario, which can create a problem to the hand path, can create a problem to the spine in terms of injury. You know, and it can also create problems in terms of path issues. You know, most golfers that I see who have very restricted hip turns cut across the ball too much. Creating a bigger hip turn will allow the hands to get a little more around you, which for most slicers of the ball will neutralize their over-the-top tendencies. So it would actually allow you to straighten out your path if you're somebody who cuts across it too much. So I would say that a large majority of golfers, it's virtually impossible for them to over-rotate their hips in the backswing just because they don't do it well enough to begin with. But is it an issue? Can it be an issue? I mean, certainly anything in the golf swing can be an issue if it's overdone. So I would say so. You know, certainly over-rotation of the hips in the backswing can cause the hands to get too deep, which, again, if you're somebody who hooks and blocks the ball, your club path is too strong from the inside, that can create a problem. But in that scenario, I don't know if I would limit the hip turn or I would change really the hand structure at the top of the backswing to prevent them from doing that. If anything, I would say, yeah, you know, you can see the sequence be in trouble. If the golfer really opens up the hips so much on the way back, it can feel like they've overspun out and it's really hard for them to get back to the golf ball and their sequence gets thrown out the window because they have too much hip turn too early. What I will say is that the timing of the hip rotation to me is probably more important than whether you're over-rotating them. You know, most golfers, a large majority of them, in my opinion, do not over-rotate their hips, but I do occasionally come across golfers who open it up too much too fast, and that can be a problem because then, in that scenario, what you end up seeing is that the hips stall out halfway back because they maxed out how much they can open, and you see a lot of runoff of the arms. And when they have a lot of runoff of the arms, you either see a really poor transition, the golfer might get too handsy, or what ends up happening from there is the golfer's swing can get way too long and their arm structure gets into a really bad spot at the top. So without talking too scientific about it, I would say that 95 to 99% of golfers probably cannot over-rotate their hips in the backswing just because most of them do not do it enough, certainly recreational golfers. But like I said, I certainly do believe for sequence reasons, if you open it up too much too soon, I could see a problem. Doesn't happen too often, but every now and again, I do come across that. So that would be more of my answer. So the next question is how to tips for hitting a draw. So how do you hit a draw? So let's first understand what a draw is. You know, a draw is a ball that curves from right to left for the right-hander or from left to right for the lefty, right? That is a draw. So how do you get a ball to curve to the left for a right-handed player? Well, for starters, very simple ball flight laws would tell you that if the face angle is closed relative to the path that the club head is traveling upon, the ball will curve to the left. So for the right-handed player, if your face is closed and your path is... So if your face angle is more left than your path, the ball is going to curve left. So you could have a 2-degree to the right club path, a 0-degree face angle, the ball is going to draw on you. It'll start straight and it'll draw on you. You could also have a 0-degree club path and a 2-degree left face, and the ball's still going to draw on you. Now, granted, it'll probably start left and then curve left, right? But it will draw on you. So the number one important part of understanding in terms of how do you hit a draw is you need the face angle to be closed relative to the direction that the club head's traveling on. So get the face closed or get it feeling closed and you'll draw the ball. Now you might start it left and then miss your target and curve further left if you're a right-handed player, but then you can manipulate that differently upon that moment. But you know, how to tips for hitting a draw. Well, start by getting the face closed relative to the path, and then from there, manipulate the path so that the ball doesn't snap hook on you, starting left, going left kind of thing. So that would be the simplistic way of looking at it. How do you fix a swing with no trail side bend in the downswing? What do you commonly see from that pattern? Okay, so this is a little more scientific. You know, a swing with no trail side bend in the downswing. So, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a golf swing with physically no trail side bend in the downswing. You probably wouldn't make contact with the golf ball. But you know, very little trill side bend. So basically, what is trill side bend? You know, stand tall, stand upright, bend your trail side, so your right side for a right-handed player, like scrunch down that rib cage, drop that right shoulder towards the outside of your right foot to the right. That would be trail side bend. So if you don't have enough of that in the downswing, what ends up happening? Well, oftentimes, if you don't have enough of that, what we'll see is the hand path moves outward too much in transition. So the hand path gets very out in front of you. It turns almost into a baseball swing. The golfer's hands and clubs stay on top of the plane for way too long, and they end up cutting across the golf ball a lot. So biggest tendencies we see with a pattern like that would be, the golfer swings too strong from outside in. That would be one really obvious pattern we come across. And the hand path moves outward really aggressively in transition. So there's virtually no drop to the hands, a very outward horizontal direction of them. That would be, an issue with a golfer who has not enough trail side bend in the downswing. Now, how do you go about fixing it? That's a whole different story. There are some golfers or coaches who like the feel of like drop the trail shoulder, and certainly that could be an option. I'm not a big fan of that. I would rather the golfer's body kick into trail side bend through the intent of something else. And so if a golfer doesn't have enough trail side bend in the downswing and you want them to add it, what I would do as a coach is I would get a player to add a lot of lateral motion towards the target. If you add a lot of displacement of the pelvis towards the target in the downswing, a lot of lateral push, a lot of lateral slide, well, naturally what that's going to do is that's going to kick your upper body away from the target, which drops the trail shoulder and adds trail side bend. And it might need to feel very exaggerated just to see a little bit of a difference there, but that would be one way to go about fixing it if the player doesn't have enough. That's certainly one way to go about it. So, adding sliding towards the target would lead to a little more elevation from the lead side, which leads to some dropping on the trail side, which kicks you into trail side bend in the downswing. So that would be one way of going about it. But a lot of science here. So I really hope you guys understand what we're talking about, because this is a really intense conversation. But hey, if you guys are science junkies like I am, let's hope you learn from this. So next question is, where can I read more about swing matchups and preferences? If we're talking about my sources of information, it would all come from the website that we are a part of called Course Kings. So there is a website that we are 4 or 5 coaches on. All these coaches work quite in detail on matchups. We all have preferences that are relatively in line with each other. And that's really where you'll probably have the most deep dive kind of analysis and fundamental understanding into it. The website is called Course Kings. It is myself, Jeff Smith, known as Radar Golf Pro on the internet, TJ Yeaton, Jeff Pierce, who is a short game coach who works with a lot of tour players, Preston Combs, who is a putting guy. And we are basically the coaches that talk in great detail on different matchups for different players. So that's probably where you'll find the most information regarding it. You can sign up to that website for a minimal fee per month and have access to all of our content on that. What is the biggest benefit of shallowing the club in the downswing? I have talked about this probably 1,000 times before. If you are a newcomer who asked this question, that's totally cool. If you're not, you probably already have this information, because I have spoken about this in great detail. The biggest benefit of shallowing the club in the downswing is creating an environment where the body can rotate pretty freely through it. So when the shaft angle steepens coming down, your body is put into an environment where if it tries to rotate, you're going to hit it pretty poorly. And so your body has to do something funky to try to get the shaft back into a shallow position, and that creates timing and creates problems. So it doesn't matter whether you want to fade the ball or draw the ball. People automatically assume steep patterns means fade, shallow patterns means draw. That's not true. We can manipulate so many different variables differently to get you to fade the ball, even if you are shallowing the club. So you can remove depth through the hand path, get the hands less behind you at the top of the backswing. You can manipulate your baseline, so where your feet are aligned. There's a lot of different ways in which you can manipulate the club path differently to fade or draw the ball, even if you are shallowing the club. But the benefit of shallowing the club is it creates an environment basically where the body can rotate cleanly through it. Because keep in mind, rotation wants to bring the club head more in front of you. If your shaft angle is already steepening, it's trying to already get more in front of you. If your body tries to rotate, that's going to double up on the club getting in front of you. You're going to hit it poorly. That's just the reality of it, especially for most recreational golfers who don't have the skill of a tour player to time that up. So biggest benefit of shallowing the club, Rotational freedom. I've used that term a million times, and that's really what the answer is. So I struggle with downhill lie approach shots. Can you give me some feedback on how to play them? Yes, absolutely. So downhill lie approach shots. So it really depends on what you mean by downhill lie. I'm assuming you mean the ball is closer, the slope is leaning towards the target. Because some people would clarify a downhill lie as in the ball is below your feet. But a downhill lie, in my view, is when the slope is going downwards towards the target. So if that is the case, and it's the way I'm envisioning this person thought about the question, you know, there's a couple of things you want to do. First of all, you can't have too much pressure and weight shifting happening in the golf swing, because the reality is, when the ball is on a downhill lie, if your body starts moving all over the place, you're moving the low point, and you have a very, very small margin for error on the low point when the ball is on that steep of a slope. If you start shifting your pressure to your trail side and you don't get it back to the lead side, you're going to hit before the ball and dig into the ground really aggressively, especially because the dirt is elevated. So the number one thing would be, let's limit the amount of pressure shifting and weight shifting we have through back foot to front foot, okay? Number two would be, you're going to have to try to line up your shoulders. Some people like to say the shoulders parallel with the slope. I don't focus on the shoulders so much. I like to tell players, align your spine perpendicular to the slope. So think about the severity of the slope. If it's 5 degrees down towards the target, align your spine perpendicular 5 degrees kind of in that direction, right? So that would be kind of the idea. And that's going to align the shoulders parallel with the slope, or at least feel-wise, that's what it will do. So align your spine perpendicular with the slope towards the target, obviously. From there, what you want to do is keep a little more pressure on the lead foot. And even if you can, try to keep a little more flex on the lead knee in the setup position. That way you're pre-setting yourself to make sure that you don't back out of the shot. The worst thing that can happen from this type of lie is if your trail side starts to drop too much, so your right shoulder for a right-handed player drops too much, you're going to stick that club straight into the ground and the ball's going to come out nowhere. So you have to stay more on top of the ball, would be like the quote-unquote way of saying it. So your chest has to stay more leaning forward towards the target. And so adding a little bit of flex to the lead knee in the setup position there presets that and allows you to make sure you can get on top of the ball in the appropriate spot. Because like I said, your low points margin for error is going to be very narrow in that scenario. So that would be the kind of setup adjustments. And obviously minimizing the pressure shifting back and forth would be a way to go about it. Now, let's understand what's going to happen when you do hit it, even if you hit it solid. Because your body is leaning towards the slope, and because the slope is pointing kind of down and forward towards the target, well, you are naturally going to deliver less loft relative to the green. So what ends up happening is, right, think about it. When your spine leans perpendicular towards the target, your handle of your club moves forward, your shaft leans forward. What ends up happening is you're de-lofting the face in theory. De-lofting it relative to what neutral would be, if that makes sense. And so your ball's going to come out lower. When you're playing on downhill lies, your ball's going to come out lower, and it's going to come out a little hotter. So what that means is it's probably going to have a little more runoff. It's going to come in it's going to land at a shallower angle of attack. It's not going to go high and land really steep, right? It's going to come out shallower, and it's going to have a little more roll. So it'll come out lower and a little hotter. So just be aware for that and play to that. So if the flag's at the front, try taking one less club, because the ball's going to come out pretty low, pretty hot. So typically what I do with players, I'll get them to actually take a club with one club more loft. So if you would, in theory, hit an 8-iron in that scenario, try playing the 9-iron from there, just to kind of give yourself a little room. If you come up a little short, that's fine. Short is usually a lot less of a penalty than going long. So you're better off coming up a little short of the green as opposed to going long of the green. That'll give you a lot more room to get up and down if you need to. But keeping it in play, that's kind of the idea there, okay? So I hope that makes sense for you guys. Can you discuss start lines as it relates to curvature? What do you look for? So, you know, the fundamental kind of big picture look of this is, if you draw the ball, meaning if you're a right-hander who's curving the ball from right to left, in theory, you want the ball to start right of your target. That doesn't mean it needs to have the ball start right of your alignment. It simply means it needs to start right of your target. There are some really good golfers who aim way right and actually play draws that are, in theory, pull draws, right? Like, I can aim 20 yards right of my target and play a ball that pulls 10 yards and draws 5 yards. Well, that ball might land at my target or near my target, but it didn't necessarily start right of my alignment. It was a pull draw relative to my alignment, right? So the idea is, understand what your ball flight gives you, and then look at start lines relative to the target, not relative to your alignment. People automatically assume everybody needs to align straight and start the ball right and get it to come back if you're playing a draw. That's not true. There are some wonderful golfers who aim right and started theoretically left of their alignment, but it's right of the target, if that makes sense. Or there's the inverse. You know, there are some really world-class golfers I've seen in front of me on the PGA Tour who, as a right-handed golfer, aims left and actually hits a little bit of a push cut, right? They're aiming left, and they're actually starting the ball way right of their alignment, and it's fading a little bit. Now, it probably started left of the target, but it started right of their alignment. So you can play to the shot shape that your ball flight is giving you to land at your target. The ultimate goal is starting the ball to the right of the target if you're going to draw it for a right-handed golfer, or to the left of the target if you're going to fade it. But it's start lines relative to the target that's important, not start lines relative to your alignment. People put too much emphasis on that. That's not necessarily what's most important here, okay? So, you know, you don't have to, not everybody has to aim straight. Not everybody has to play a straight alignment that's right to left draw that starts with a face open. I mean, that's not necessarily true, okay? What is the best way to measure your dispersion without a launch monitor? So what I will tell players is, if you really want to be simple with it, use a two-finger rule. So what that means is, you know, there's one of the skill development games I've worked on with a player, or actually with numerous players really, is I will get them to hit shots to different targets, obviously. Now, in terms of what would you consider an acceptable dispersion, what I will tell the player is, if you're a right-handed guy, stick out your right arm and fully extend your arm out in front of your eyes, okay? And what you want to do is take your index and your middle fingers and put them together and look at how far that is to your target. That would be an acceptable dispersion. As the target gets further away, those two fingers start to cover more territory. As the target gets closer to you, that those two fingers cover a more narrow territory. It is a very simple kind of method you can use to measure your dispersion without necessarily needing a launch monitor. So if you're looking at 100 yards in front of you and you're hitting a wedge, if you stick those two fingers out in front of you at that 100-yard target, those two fingers might cover 15 feet, right? And I'm just throwing out a random ballpark number, but you get the idea. If you are looking at a target where it's like way out into the fairway, into the distance, and you're looking at a 300-yard target, well, putting those two fingers out in front of you, right? Close one eye, look at what those two fingers out with the arm fully extended. Those two fingers might all of a sudden cover 50 feet, right? So that would be the best way to analyze what's considered an acceptable dispersion without necessarily needing a launch monitor. I call it the two-finger rule. It's a really simple way of doing it, and it allows you to assess how good you're getting in terms of your aim lines and all of that, okay? So this is the last question here, is a really simple question. You know, how do you get a deeper hip turn on the backswing? I mean, this is really a simple one to answer. Trail side extension is the best way to explain it. Basically, what I've noticed from golfers who restrict their hip turns and they don't allow themselves to get that deep hip turn is they retain too much flex to the back knee. So for the right-handed player like me, that is your right knee. Golfers who retain too much flex on the trail knee, typically what that does is that puts a lot of pressure on the legs. So if you try rotating and getting a deeper hip turn, but your leg is going to kill you because it's stretching the hamstring and the quads and the kneecap and the ankles, and it really hurts because you're keeping too much flex to that back knee. When your hip turn gets too level because of that, it tends to put a lot of pressure on the body. You will never create injury to yourself. Your brain is too smart to let that happen. So you just end up restricting the hip turn because it's too painful. So if you want to be able to free up the hips to get into a deeper turn, what you need to do is lose some flex to that back knee. Don't lock the knee joint, because we don't want to be doing that. You can't use the ground very well after that. But lose some flex to the back knee, and that will guarantee that your trail hip will be able to get into a deeper turn, and it will take a bunch of pressure off the leg so it doesn't hurt, and you'll be able to get that full turn that you want. So lead knee flexes down and moves inwards. Trail knee extends, it loses flex, and it actually gets up and behind you, and that will allow you to create a nice full turn, and you'll be able to get that deep turn with the hips that you're trying to get into. So that would be the answer to that. So hope that helps. There is a lot of science here, so I really hope I didn't confuse anybody. Obviously, you know, the golf swing at the end of the day is scientific, and, you know, I'm a coach who deals with a lot of this. So, obviously I'm going to answer in a simplistic way, but at the same time, you know, too simple is no good either. So you want to make sure it's clear cut. So If anybody has any questions, like I said, please feel free to contact me and I will happily clarify it with a visual or whatever need be. And that's pretty much it for this episode. So we just wanted to change this up this week. And like I said, just do a little bit of a Q&A. We hope this helps you guys out. You know, we're going to be doing more of these. Sometimes we'll even bring on another coach and maybe just do a Q&A with them and ask them a bunch of scientific questions and let them answer it. I think that can be interesting too, to get a second opinion from another coach. And that's pretty much it for this week. We hope you guys have a good week and a good weekend. And, you know, stay safe out there. The virus is still very much present, so be careful. Wear your masks when you go in public. Protect everyone else. And, yeah, let's get your games in good shape.